This message, titled Let Love Continue from Hebrews chapter 13, verses 1 through 6, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com. Brothers and sisters, without a desire to insult anybody's intelligence this evening, as we return to this letter, I want to begin by pointing out really two very obvious things about those words that we have just read. The first obvious thing that I want to point out to you, and even a quick glance at these verses demonstrates it, is that this passage of this letter to the Hebrews is almost completely filled with commands. The apostle begins what we have as the 13th chapter, and in very quick, very rapid succession, not only in the verses you have heard read this evening, but even continuing longer into this chapter, by my count, there are nearly 20 commands given very, very rapidly by the author. The second obvious thing that I want you to focus on and think of this evening, the second obvious thing, not only are there many commands here, but these commands come at the conclusion of this letter. As the author takes his pen to write these commands, it is obvious he does not begin his letter saying and commanding these things. But he only chooses to conclude his letter in that way. And there is, brothers and sisters, and we need to appreciate something of this even this evening, there is a purpose for that. If I can express it this way this evening, the purpose for that is that the duties of Christianity, the duties of the Christian life, come out of, they flow out of, they are a byproduct, you might say, of the doctrines of Christianity. The duties of the Christian life flow out of the doctrines and the truths of the Christian faith. That holiness without which none shall see God, according to what the author has written elsewhere, that holiness requires, first and foremost, that our minds be shaped by the truth of God. And in having our minds shaped by the truth of God, then inevitably leading to a transformation in the way in which we are to live our lives. And you perhaps begin to get a sense of that. Now, I trust everybody knows and remembers this evening that when the Spirit inspired this text, of course, the chapter divisions and the verses are not inspired. And so what we have as the 13th chapter, in some ways, is an unfortunate break. Because what the apostle wants to write here, in many ways, he begins to write in the 28th verse of chapter 12. Not to retrace the steps that we have taken in weeks past, but you remember that the end of Hebrews chapter 12, the apostle really comes to the pinnacle. He comes to the apex of this letter. And he reminds us in a glorious conclusion there in verse 27 that we in Jesus Christ have received a kingdom, that God will shake all things. And then you notice in verse 28 that key word, therefore. Therefore, because of what I have been writing, he is saying, because of that, here then is what you are to do. You are to be grateful because in Jesus you have received a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And then in verse 28, not only let us be grateful, but in verse 28, let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. There are right there two let us statements. Because of what he's written, therefore let us do this and let us do that. But brothers and sisters, the Christian life is more, it is more than simply my relationship or your relationship with God. The Christian life is also about our relationship with the people of God. And so in what we have as the 13th chapter, here is another thing drawn out of what the apostle has been writing, let brotherly love continue. Let us be grateful for having received a kingdom that cannot be shaken. Let us offer acceptable worship and let brotherly love continue. And this evening, as we cross the threshold to the conclusion of this letter, what I want to do with the words that we've read this evening is to focus your attention on a singular command and then a fourfold example. A singular command, and then secondly this evening, a fourfold example. So first this evening, let's look carefully at the singular command. In verse 1, simply put in those few words, a verse that if you want to commit to memory would take all of us about 20 seconds, the apostle says, let brotherly love continue. Let brotherly love continue. And brothers and sisters, for anybody who is in one sense even vaguely or remotely familiar with Christianity, with the Christian faith, then what the author writes here probably does not come, or at least should not come, as a surprise to any of us. Because without exaggeration, there is perhaps nothing more insisted upon for the life of a Christian than to be a person of love. It would, in fact, be almost impossible to over-exaggerate the place that love must have in the lives of God's children. So emphatic is the Bible about this. So emphatic is all of Scripture. I will admit to you, if I can this evening, even in preaching this, it is hard to adequately emphasize the demand that is placed upon us as the people of God to be a people of love. And that, in some ways, it's interesting. It's interesting for this reason. We've seen in weeks past as the apostle moves from the glorious doctrines that he has written concerning the person and the work of Jesus Christ, we've seen the way in which he begins to tell us about the need for holiness in our lives. If you remember, in particular, in the 12th chapter, where he writes about the necessity of the Father's discipline in our lives, he actually tells us, God disciplines us. Why? So that you and I can participate, he says, in his holiness, to be a holy people. And he writes in that same chapter, in chapter 12, and in those memorable words, that without holiness, no one will see God. And here's the point, brothers and sisters, that the holiness with which the Lord, by the sanctification of the Spirit, by his fatherly hand of chastisement, the holiness which God seeks in the gospel to cultivate in our lives is a holiness that is measured by love. Love is the measurement of the holiness in our lives. Maybe you remember this evening the way in which Jesus himself spoke this, as he met with his disciples in the upper room on the evening in which he was betrayed. In John chapter 13, Jesus tells his disciples, I hope you remember this. Jesus says to them in John 13:34, "A new command I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you." And of course, from one angle, and we need to understand this, from one angle, the command to love is not the thing that is new. On every page of Scripture, in the Old Testament and in the New, we are commanded to be a people of love. Jesus himself teaches, as do the rest of the Scriptures, that the Ten Commandments are really summed up in this, to love God and to what? To love neighbor. It is not the command of love that is new, but what Christ is saying there in such wonderful, vivid terms to his disciples and to us, the command itself, the content of the command is not new, but the demonstration is, because what we have in Jesus Christ is love incarnate. We have a living, breathing example of the love that you and I are to have and to manifest to one another. Jesus says you are to love one another just as I have loved you. Just as I have loved you. That is how you are to love each other. And Jesus goes on, as you may remember, to say this is exactly how the world knows we are his disciples. They know we are his disciples by the love that we have for one another. And maybe this evening you remember the emphasis of the Apostle Paul. There in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and in that chapter that is commonly known and commonly called the love chapter. Not a chapter that was written for weddings. It's a chapter that was written for the church. And maybe without getting into all of the details this evening, but you remember the way in which Paul, in such a manifold way, describes love. Love is patient and love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not rude. It is not arrogant. It is not self-seeking, on and on. And some of us, we need to appreciate the pointedness of that. And what I mean by that is that as Paul is telling the Corinthians, here's what love is. What's fascinating is if you take the whole context of that letter, Paul has actually rebukes the Corinthians because they're not patient, because they're not kind, because they're arrogant, because they're rude. And Paul is saying in the most pointed way, you want to know, O Corinthians, what love is? Love isn't you. It's not you. You're not living in the love that is commanded of you in the Lord Jesus Christ. Maybe you remember how Paul begins that chapter. If you speak with the tongues of angels and men, but you don't have love, you're a clanging cymbal. If you have faith to move mountains, my family and I just drove this summer, as many of you know, to and from Lake Tahoe, and we went through the majestic mountains, the Rocky Mountains. And Paul says, if you have faith to move those mountains, but you don't have love, you are nothing. Very politically incorrect thing to say in our world. You're a big zero. You amount to nothing if you don't have love. Or in the third place, Paul says there, if you give your body to be burned, but you don't have love, you've gained nothing. It is love that makes a Christian, makes us live the Christian life. It's why Paul elsewhere in Romans 13, love is the fulfilling of the law. And I say all of that to come back here to Hebrews 13. And as the apostle takes his pen and he writes this command, let brotherly love continue. What he is doing here, brothers and sisters, he is putting it this way. On the basis of everything that I have said, on the basis of all that I have written to you, all those things that we as a church have been looking at for the last 21 weeks, Since February, when we first began in this letter, the apostle is saying, on the basis of all of that, all of the glories and the excellencies of Jesus Christ, on that basis, because of that, you need to love one another. It's the singular command. And I want you to notice this evening, before we move on, the nuance with which this command is given to us. You notice it's let brotherly love continue. Let brotherly love. If you know a little bit of Christian vocabulary, it's commonly known that the biblical word for brotherly love is what? It's Philadelphia. Right? We think of that city in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. It's the city of brotherly love. And what the apostle is telling us here is, in as much as that city in Pennsylvania has hijacked that name, what the apostle is telling us is the Church of Jesus Christ is to be a Philadelphia. Maybe more personal this evening, the Reformed Presbyterian Church of Winchester, Kansas is to be Philadelphia. It is to be a place of brotherly love. And the apostle frames this in family terms, in familial terms. And it is, as we recall this letter, it's fitting that he should do that. It's fitting for this reason. Do you remember, as the author of Hebrews was writing early on in this letter about the glories of Jesus, he writes about the way in which the only begotten became man, how Jesus Christ is willing to be identified with us. And in Hebrews 2, verse 11, you may remember, this is what he says. He says, "For he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source." This is why he, that is Jesus, this is why he is not ashamed to call them brothers. Christ is not ashamed to call his people brothers. And here the apostle is telling us that we are to treat one another with the exact same filial love with which Jesus has not only loved us, but the love that Jesus has never and will never be ashamed to show to his people. That's how we're to love each other in this congregation. He sets it in terms of brotherly love. And then notice again the nuance here of this singular command. In verse 1, let brotherly love, and I so appreciate what he says. He does not say, let brotherly love begin. He doesn't say, let brotherly love start. He doesn't hear in the first verse, as he commends love to us, he doesn't then in turn rebuke and chastise. If you're vaguely familiar with this letter, you know that the author has not spared language in rebuking those who need to be rebuked. He's got a backbone of steel, and he doesn't stand to flatter any man. But he doesn't chastise. What he says is, let brotherly love continue. Let it remain. Let it stay. Let it be constant. Let it continue. And the point simply is this. The point is this. They are a people who already love one another. They're not a people who need to be goaded and prodded to say, you know, they're not the Corinthians. They actually love each other. They actually manifest this brotherly love to one another with constancy. And he's simply saying,
continue in that, continue to do that. And there's a point there, brothers and sisters, that we have to appreciate, that I appreciate as a Christian and I appreciate as a pastor. And the point is this, that loving one another the way in which Jesus wants us to love each other, it's not a helpless pursuit. It's not a helpless pursuit as though this thing called love is a carrot that is dangled in front of us and we are ever pursuing and never reaching. Or as though it's just a hopeless and helpless endeavor, one in which we will always be falling short of and never being able to achieve. The apostle is saying, you people are doing it. You people are doing it. So continue in it. It's so similar, if you remember from our time in 1 Thessalonians, it's so similar to what Paul writes to the Thessalonians. He comes in the fourth chapter, and maybe you remember because it is memorable. He says, concerning brotherly love, I don't even need to write to you. I don't need to write to you about brotherly love because you're already loving one another. So I'll just simply tell you, love one another more and more. It's the same emphasis of this singular command, let brotherly love continue. Let it continue. So that's the singular command. But then secondly, this evening, I want you to see a fourfold example. A fourfold example. So the way I understand it is verse 1 is the singular command. It's maybe you want to think of it in terms, it's the umbrella command. So that what follows from the apostle is not going beyond this command, it's simply going deeper into the command. Because the apostle, as we have seen, he's ever the pastor, isn't he? He's ever the pastor. And he knows, as well as we all ought to know, what it is that Jesus told the disciples as he prepared to ascend into heaven. What did Jesus say in Matthew 28? He said, go into the world and what? Make disciples. And how are we to make disciples? We make disciples by baptizing. And we make disciples by teaching whatsoever Christ has commanded. But maybe your ears picked up that that's not exactly what Jesus says. Jesus doesn't simply say, teach what I have commanded. Jesus says in Matthew 28:20, teach them to observe. Teach them to observe what I have commanded. I remember someone once very memorably saying, you can teach a parrot every command that Jesus has commanded. And that parrot can parrot it back to you. But there is a world of difference between simply teaching what Jesus has commanded and teaching people to observe what he has commanded. And so this is what the apostle does. He teaches how to observe, how to continue in brotherly love. And he does that by giving four examples, a fourfold example of brotherly love. So what are these? Well, the first example that he gives, we might summarize with a simple word. If we are to let brotherly love continue, we are to be a people who show kindness. In verse 2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Don't neglect. Don't forget to show hospitality. And again, if you have some knowledge of biblical vocabulary, you might know that brotherly love is the word Philadelphia. And you might know that hospitality literally is love to strangers. Love to strangers. Do not neglect to show love to strangers. And here, We need to, again, appreciate the apostle on his own terms. We usually think in terms of a stranger is someone who's unknown to us. And there's an aspect of that, but that doesn't go quite far enough for what the apostle intends here. The word stranger does mean, to an extent, someone who is unknown. But if you remember, the one other place in which the author uses this term, it's in Hebrews 11, when he reminds us that men and women who are commended in this world for faith, they are people who are what? They are strangers in this world. Because Christians don't belong in the world. We are strangers. We are foreigners. We are aliens. So that there is a breadth of meaning as he writes here, don't neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Not merely people who are unknown to you, but people who are known to you, who become known to you, who are together with you, heirs of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And he's saying it is your job as Christians to let this brotherly love continue, to do kindness to those who are unknown, to those who are Christian brothers and sisters, to be hospitable to them, to give them, can I put it this way this evening, in a very real sense, to give belonging, to give a place of belonging to one who doesn't belong to this world. And to do so, as we often think, and I think quite rightly, to do so by inviting and receiving and entertaining people in our own homes with our own resources. That's the picture of hospitality. That's what he is saying. Here's what you need to do. Show kindness by bringing people into the circumference of your life and in your life, giving them a place of belonging. Now, friends, this is commanded. This is commanded of elders. Actually, more than being commanded of elders, this is a qualification to be an elder. 1 Timothy 3 tells us that an elder is to be hospitable. Not simply something that an elder seeks to achieve. It is a qualification to be an elder in the Church of Jesus Christ. You have to love strangers. It is a qualification. But it is equally, brothers and sisters, I want you to know this evening. It is equally true of every single Christian. We are to show kindness. To show kindness. And you notice the way he writes this, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. And then he adds this very interesting part, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. I think it's a clear reference to Abram, who welcomed the strangers to find that the men he welcomed were angels themselves. But I don't think, brothers and sisters, if I can suggest it this evening, I don't think that the apostle puts that there for us so that we can stare with wide-eyed speculation at angelology. Oh, wow. Am I going to welcome an angel into my home? What does that even look like? What does that even mean? Why does he add this? He adds this, brothers and sisters. He adds this to emphasize the tremendous honor of welcoming the stranger. If you can just think of a thought experiment this evening, I wonder what would have happened if Gabriel the angel walked through our door this morning and you went and you introduced yourself to this stranger and you said, my name is Kyle, or whatever your name is. And Gabriel returned that and said to you even what he said to Zechariah, I am Gabriel and I stand in the presence of God. I wonder how I would respond in that moment. was nice to meet you, Gabriel. See you next time. I imagine instinctively it would be accounted probably the greatest honor of our lives to say, Gabriel, when we're done worshiping, will you come to my home? And I imagine Gabriel would get more invitations to people's home than anybody has ever received. And people would be crowding the living space to be in the presence of the one who stands in the presence of God. It would be an honor. It would be a privilege. And if I can frame it that way this evening, I think that's the heart of the writer here. This is the honor that attends those who show kindness by not neglecting to show hospitality and giving belonging to those who don't belong in this sin-saturated world. Let brotherly love continue by kindness. Let brotherly love continue, in the second place, we might say this evening, by sympathy. In verse 3, remember those who are in prison, as though in prison with them, and those who are mistreated, since you also are in the body. If you remember this letter, the apostle is writing to people who are actually facing real persecution. The things going on in the lives of the people to whom this letter is written, not trivialities about what Disney is doing or Bud Light is doing. The apostle actually says to those to whom he's writing, you know, some of you have been carted off to prison. Some of you are imprisoned for the sake of Jesus Christ. Others of you have gladly accepted the plundering of your property. You have gladly accepted people stealing and robbing your possessions and your belongings for the sake of Jesus Christ. This is the reality in which they lived, brothers and sisters. It's the reality in which countless Christians have lived throughout the history of the church. Facing real trials, real tribulation, real suffering, real persecution for the sake of Jesus Christ. And the apostle says here, here's how brotherly love manifests itself to people like that. Remember those who are in prison. And not just an act of the memory, but he says, remember those who are in prison as though in prison with them. To find yourself so bound to those who are being mistreated and those who are being maligned and those who are being oppressed and those who are being persecuted, to regard yourself as actually suffering the injury alongside of them. That's sympathy. And it's what the apostle Paul says elsewhere. You remember in 1 Corinthians 12, we are all members of one body. So when one of our members suffers, we all suffer. We all suffer when one member of the body suffers. We are commanded to feel what they feel and to suffer spiritually what they suffer. We are to be a sympathetic people. Let brotherly love continue, not only in kindness, not only in sympathy. Let brotherly love continue in purity. Verse 4, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled. For God will judge the sexually immoral and adulteress. And maybe you notice here that verse 4 is not directed simply to husbands and wives. The apostle does not say here, husbands and wives, honor your marriage. Husbands and wives, keep the marriage bed undefiled. This is a universal command among the church to all Christians. Let marriage be held in honor among all. Let all of you, married or unmarried, wife or husband, let all of you, young and old, men and women, let all of you honor marriage. And not just the marital relationship, but all that the marital relationship signifies, right? Marriage and let the marriage bed and all that that signifies, the unity of marriage, let that be honored and respected among all. Can I simply put it this way this evening? We are to honor the marriages present here in our church, laboring for their good, praying for their good, seeking their good. That is what we are to do, to honor everyone's marriage, and we are to honor the thing that marriage signifies, which is pure union. Pure union. This is why the Apostle Paul, and this doesn't preach well in today's culture, even in today's culture. But this is why the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy 5 tells Timothy, treat every older woman as a mother and treat every younger woman as a sister with absolute purity. And the Apostle says that is how you let brotherly love continue, to treat those around you with absolute sexual purity, with the tremendous threat from the pen of the apostle, a reminder that God will judge the sexually immoral. And that is not just the sexual immorality characterized by our culture, the LGBTQ community. It is any sexual experience outside of the context of a biblical marriage. A marriage between one man and one woman, anything beyond that, anything outside of that, anything aside from that is sexual immorality. And God will judge. And so we let brotherly love continue in all purity. And we let brotherly love continue, brothers and sisters. We let it continue in contentment. Verse 5, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. Keep your life free from the love of money. Why does the apostle include this under a command for brotherly love? Well, friends, he does it for this reason. The love of money, which is covetousness, if maybe I can say it this way this evening, covetousness is the sinful response of our hearts, our attitudes, our desires toward what our neighbor has. It's why the 10th commandment in Exodus chapter 20, God commands, doesn't he? Do not covet. Do not covet your neighbor's house. Do not covet your neighbor's wife. Do not covet your neighbor's male servant. Do not covet your neighbor's female servant. Do not covet your neighbor's ox. Do not covet your neighbor's donkey. And then the catch-all, do not covet anything that is your neighbor's. Covetousness, the love of money, is a sin that divides people. It is a sin that divides brothers. Coveting and desiring and wanting those things that other people have. And the apostle says, keep your life free from it. And you keep your life free from it simply in this way, being content and being satisfied with what you have. You remember the way that Paul set the example in 1 Timothy 6, verse 8. What is it that Paul said? As long as I have food and shelter with these things, I am content. I am content. And so cultivating a contentment, a satisfaction with what God has given us and what God has not given you in this life is actually a means to love one another in the church. To let brotherly love continue And this is the way in which the apostle begins to frame the conclusion of this letter. Let brotherly love continue. And do that by being a people of kindness, of sympathy, of purity, and of contentment. But you notice the way in which these verses, the way in which they end. Because the apostle holds forth for us this precious promise. Be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? The promise is this: the presence of God. The promise is the presence of God and every blessing that comes from being a people who live in his presence. And the confidence that we have as we seek to let brotherly love continue is to claim by faith this glorious truth: the Lord is my helper. He helps me be content. He helps me be pure. He helps me be sympathetic. It is he who helps me show the kindness that I am to show in letting brotherly love continue. Let's pray.